we're telling this joke as three reformed rabbis. Unbelievable. Go on, now you have to tell it.
Rabbling on. Rabbling on. Rabbling on.
Hi everyone, welcome to our podcast episode of Rabbiting On. I am joined by the wonderful Rabbi Miriam and the wonderful Rabbi Debbie. Hi.
Hello, hello. Hi.
We are going to be talking today about weddings, mixed faith blessings, all sorts of gorgeous things about people wanting to come together and mark it in a ceremony form and the great mitzvah that we have of officiating. So we're going to start by looking ahead into the calendar. We're getting into the winter months now of whether we've got winter weddings coming up. I love this time of year, actually, I have to say, like coming up to the Christmas Hanukkah time. I love it. So winter weddings and spring weddings, summer weddings. How are your diaries looking given that we've been through 2 years of separation and not being able to have weddings?
Yeah, we're really busy, certainly next year from sort of February onwards. I haven't got any in the next 12 months, but I had a winter wedding. We had a December wedding. We'd thought about getting married in the summer and putting up like a giant tent and being hippies. But I was a student rabbi and had to prepare for the High Holy Days and didn't think I'd have enough time to get married as well. So I decided it would be in December instead.
Oh, I love a winter wedding.
It did snow, actually, very lightly.
Oh, nice.
I'm loving the extra kind of joy that is in wedding ceremonies, just in that kind of we're all together and people are here and the sort of the people who've made it from abroad and that kind of vibe that actually so much of what we used to take for granted is coming out and creating such a kind of high intense emotion at these sort of now the very postponed or the we're doing it quickly because kind of weddings that have come post lockdown, which has been really, really lovely. Yes.
Yeah, it's a real blessing, isn't it? I am at our recent wedding anniversary, which is in August, watched the wedding video for me and Anthony. We got married in Jerusalem, Noch, Yerushalayim. It was beautiful. And oh my gosh, I've forgotten how many years we've been married for. 12? Don't know. Anyway, so watching the wedding video and I was just crying the whole way through it because it was so extraordinary that we didn't even think really about however many, I don't know, 50 of our friends or 80 flying out to Israel and all being together. And like just sitting with the amount of separation we'd had. And of course, whenever you watch a wedding video, it's awful because so many of our like close family and friends had passed away or things had changed just so significantly in their lives and friendships that had just fallen away. So I always find that very painful, but it was extra painful of just like, gosh, did we know how precious that was to be together? I think we did, but now at the weddings that I'm officiating at, it's even more so. Yeah.
It's so funny. I find whenever I look back at my stuff to do with wedding, which was 16 years ago next month, I know I would do it so differently now.
Yeah, same.
And it's so interesting. Like, you know, I was pretty young for a bride. I think I was like 25. And yeah, I would just do things so differently now. I think actually the pandemic has also helped lots of people see that you can do things very differently. It doesn't have to be what you'd always imagined. And it can actually be extra meaningful. Like you said, these things come into sharper focus because of how difficult it's been to do it. You know, I've done weddings with 15 people and they were so precious. It's very special.
I hope you mean that you do the ceremony differently, by the way, rather than the person.
Yes, that's exactly what I would do, the ceremony. Well, also the party, actually. It was like the party and ceremony. I would totally do it differently. I think we sort of went with kind of very sort of what was expected tradition and what parents would have expected. And I think we just do it really differently now.
Yeah.
It's funny. Even at the time when we were preparing for our wedding, we were already talking about, well, please God, we'll have a bar or bat mitzvah in years to come for our future children. And then we could do the things we didn't have the budget for our wedding. you know, I think I'd always assumed our wedding ceremony would look a particular way because once you've got a dad as a rabbi who you know is going to officiate, the other things kind of feel like it will always fit around that kind of model. But as far as the party was concerned, we were always then looking for kind of part two. And please God, 2024 will bring about that opportunity as well.
Did you always want your dad to officiate?
I don't think it was ever really a question. Like, I know it sounds funny, but I I mean, it wouldn't have occurred to me that anybody else would have done. I think as a family, we've always been kind of the rabbi for ourselves sort of thing. Like, you know, my dad gave the eulogy at my mum's funeral. I mean, we don't do kind of let's, which rabbi are we going to ask? We do these things ourselves. So I don't think it ever occurred to me that he wouldn't.
Sorry, your dad did the eulogy at my dad's funeral because I wouldn't. Because he asked me to, I was like,
you
no.
Hadn't been a rabbi for quite as long as he had.
I wasn't a rabbi, I was a student.
There you go.
But yeah, it's my dad wanted to sing in the choir at my wedding and was very disappointed that I wouldn't permit it. I was like, I'd quite like you to be next to me in the hubba.
Oh, in the, yeah.
Not in the choir with your mates.
That's funny.
I can understand that.
These things can actually be quite, thinking about, I'm just thinking about the chuppah now in terms of like who's underneath it, because my dad's not Jewish, as you know, and I now in work have a lot of couples who have such pain over having had a wedding where certain members weren't allowed under the chuppah with them because of Jewish status. And it wasn't even like a question or a thought or a problem that my dad would obviously be right next to me in it. And the pain of him not being able to.
If you have someone who's converted, it would never occur to me that their parents shouldn't stand at the chuppah with us.
Right. Right? Even, yeah.
It's, this is who you are. This is your family. Why could they not stand with you and celebrate with us? That's really sad. I know what you mean there. There's lots of people who have had that experience and have had people excluded. I'd never want to do that.
Yeah.
I do love the setup of a wedding, though, the intimacy of what happens for the very small number of people under the chuppah is so different to what's going on for kind of everybody else in the room. I love that the couple are not kind of performing for the room, but rather it's this kind of real cocooned moment of the love that's surrounding them and almost protecting them from the community they've created around them. They very much are the witnesses, but the intimacy of what happens under there and the privilege that it feels to be part of that intimacy under the chuppah, it's a really wonderful part, I think, of our roles. I do love that.
And it's so lovely after walking this sort of planning journey, because everyone thinks that there are certain things that always happen at a wedding, but actually every wedding is unique. There's loads of choices people can make about what they want to include or not. You know, you don't have to circle, you don't have to have a bedeckan. Bedeckan is this ceremony that's done in lots of different ways in different places. Traditionally, it's actually quite a public ceremony where the groom is brought to the bride, and people often believe that it's about checking they've got the right bride, and they'll lift the veil up and see that it's the right sister, it's Rachel and not Leah. But actually the roots of the ceremony are in Rebecca veiling herself when she saw Isaac and saying, I've decided this is the one for me and I'm gonna save myself for this one. But I tend to use it as a moment where we come together very privately and intimately, unless the couple want to do it more publicly, with parents and kind of the immediate family. And parents will often give their children a blessing, send them, you know, on this journey together to the chuppah, because we don't give our children away in Judaism. We accompany them on this next part of their journey. You know, there's all sorts of things you can add in and take out, and different Sephardi and Ashkenazi customs, and working through with a couple what's going to be meaningful for them and then bringing that to life is, you know, it's just so wonderful to celebrate like that. And equally so if it's a mixed faith celebration, you know, the ability to bring who each of these people are into a celebration of their marriage and to have a Jewish welcome to say, yay, you're doing this. And okay, it's not a Jewish wedding, but you're still part of the Jewish community. You're still able to have a Jewish life and to have a meaningful Jewish moment with this, you know, mixed faith couple is so precious and so important.
Yeah, I often find that it's interesting that, so like we know that we're legally as rabbis allowed to marry, or we can only marry two Jews to each other who are members of our community legally, civilly together. And the reason we do mixed faith blessings is because we can't do that legally for someone who's Jewish or not Jewish. So we do a blessing, a ceremony after the blessing. And I often find the conversations with couples who are from dual heritage backgrounds are so rich, and the ceremony is so personal and beautiful. I've married a gorgeous couple. He's Jewish, she was Muslim from Oman. And the amount of detail of the tiny things that they brought, the poems, the symbols into it, committing to a Jewish home, but we didn't have a chuppah. They had a circle of flowers and stones that people brought and made the circle around them. And it was so well thought through. And sometimes, and I think I'm the same, and maybe that's what you were saying, Debbie, like with my wedding, I just was like, oh, here's the box of what a Jewish wedding is. Didn't question, hang on, is this inherently sexist, which it could well be, or, you know, getting alternative Sheva Brachot, the seven blessings of like friends and family. I didn't even think about any of that. So I often try with couples to say you've got lots of options, but I think it's quite hard because people want maybe what a Jewish wedding looks like. And also sometimes the options can be really overwhelming, I think. Yeah. And I'm like, get overexcited. But you could do this and then you could do this. And I had a couple that did this and they're just like, ah!
And I definitely would want a circle of stones and flowers that the guests have brought. I'm totally putting that in my next wedding. Yeah. when we do that. But so, Robin, you got married in Israel. Was it a wedding under the rabbinate and you had a civil wedding here, or did you do everything legally in Israel?
No, we had to get married separate twice. We actually got married three times. That's a whole other story. We got married. We had to have a civil wedding in Manchester at Jackson's Very Synagogue before. You always have to do that before the Jewish wedding. And then we went out to Israel and got married there. So it wasn't legal at all. And that's obviously because the rabbinate, the Orthodox rabbinate, controls everything to do with life cycle events. So it's not legal in Israel. And it therefore wouldn't have been legal in Britain either. And it's got stricter, hasn't it? We had that case, was it like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when Israeli rabbi, reform rabbi, got arrested for conducting a wedding because it's illegal. So loads of Israelis, reform or otherwise, secular or whatever, will go outside of Israel, won't they, to get married. So yeah, we did it kind of before, you know, the threat of arrest of a reform rabbi for doing it. But
and the real challenge of that is there's no civil marriage in Israel. You can only have a Muslim, a Christian, or an Orthodox Jewish wedding, which creates so many challenges for people. It's really, really something that we need to change.
Yeah.
But it's interesting here that there's no ability to be able to weave together any of that kind of civil and religious piece. So like if you have a civil wedding in the UK, that you're not allowed any kind of anything that might even refer to anything that could be construed as religious. I always tell our couples, like, it means you can't even walk down the aisle to Robbie Williams' Angels because that's construed as religious language.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So, you know, the secular piece is really tightly boundaried around what does then religion look like? And that has to be kept completely separate. So when I do mixed faith blessings, I often talk to the couple about, well, what's the journey you want to take the kind of your guests on as well? Because those two pieces, the mixed faith blessing, the mixed heritage blessing, and the civil wedding have to be totally separate. So do you want kind of two peaks on the same day, or do you just want to go and do that civil piece kind of quietly the day before or before anyone arrives or whatever it is? Or is this a kind of little extra that's at the party that kind of is just a kind of something extra? But I do find that people are walking this tightrope when they're planning their weddings, especially when they're thinking kind of what's the Jewish involvement. I think there's the like fiddler on the roof piece sitting on their shoulder of like, I just want to circle and I just want the chuppah and I want it to be exactly as it's always been. And this piece of like, I want to be able to show as my wedding what our marriage is going to be like. Because that's the important thing, right? Is this a reflection of what your marriage is going to look like in decades to come? And how are you going to use the symbolism to be able to show this is what we're creating?
I'm sure this is anecdotal, but there's been a really interesting trend, certainly in the couples I've been working with, where a lot of the LGBT couples are going for the most traditional formats possible, having spent decades being locked out of these rituals. And actually, I know there are lots of people in the LGBT community who wouldn't want to buy into those heteronormative models, but there's also a generation now who are saying, this is accessible to us and we're going to do it as much as we can. We're going to go as traditional as possible, while sort of, you know, more straight couples might be saying, okay, how creative can we be? How off the norm can we make this and unique? And I don't know if you've sort of seen that trend, but I think it's so wonderful to be able to offer all these options to so many different couples with different kinds of love.
Certainly done gay weddings where it's literally only been the grammar that I've changed from the sort of most traditional, this is what a Reformed Jewish wedding looks like. We just happen to have two grooms and an older gay relative coming up to me after the chuppah and just kind of being so emotional about the fact that not only was his nephew able to have a Jewish wedding, but also such a traditional wedding when all of that had been not just denied of him, but kind of not even on a radar of something that he could push towards, really made me understand why couples are saying, you know, nobody will push me away from this tradition again. I'm taking this as my own.
I think that's so powerful, isn't it? Because I often get caught up in the ceremony itself and where it's come from, of like kiddush shin, the idea that like originally it was a ceremony where the woman was bought, and a lot of that language is still in the ceremony. So the ring exchange is that kind of consideration given. That's the legal term for like, here's a contract and this is now happening. So we have this mutual ring exchange in reform ceremonies. But in essence, we don't change. It's still a contract of buying, really, like in essence. However,
except if you give a ring back, that's what undoes it, right? So in the Orthodox mode, only the bride receives a ring because she is being purchased. Mm-hmm. And so the giving of the ring back to the man, that's showing this isn't a purchase. This is an equal commitment. Because if you give your price, according to halakha, if you give the ring, if you give a ring back, if you give anything back, it's not an acquiring. You're not buying something. So even if a groom doesn't want to wear a ring, I will insist there is an exchange of rings under the chuppah. You know, decade ago, you could say, okay, we'll just do it one way then. But I've never allowed it.
Yeah.
And I think there is a kind of transactional element unless you explain the rituals in a particular way. So I like to make sure that I kind of remind the couple under the chuppah of this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it. And this is the kind of the interpretation you've chosen of this. Because, yes, you can, you know, check under the veil that you've got the right, you know, you've got the right bride. Yes, you can circle and check out your produce from kind of every angle. Yes, you can exchange a ring and kind of put a financial price on that transaction. Or you can have a beautiful moment of bedeken where parents are sending their children to their chuppah with a final blessing. Or you can create a circle of a new unit that this couple are creating together as they circle each other. Or you can have a very visible sign exchanged with each other of something that's going to be this permanent fixture on their hand that is going to be an outward sign that they're married. Like, you know, it's all about how you interpret the ritual, not necessarily should we do the ritual or not anymore.
Which is so true for every ritual, really, right? There is so much Jewishly that we can reclaim and re-empower ourselves with. And sometimes we have to, you know, unpick the misogyny and unpick the racism or whatever it is in it. And then having acknowledged that, liberate it from it and take what we need from it and make it beautiful. And there's so much beautiful in wedding ceremonies that you can do.
I sometimes wonder, though, we've come so far from kind of the traditions of, so when Johnny and I went to register our intent to marry at the, you know, town hall.
Were you a spinster, Miriam?
To get those licenses, right? We officially were registered at different addresses. We'd both had our own flats. Because my mum told me I wasn't, before my mum had died, she told me never move in with a guy before he's proposed to you, because otherwise he's got no reason to marry you and you'll just be waiting for that wedding forever. She died, so Johnny had no cause for we waited till we were engaged before we moved in together. But because we were then buying a house together, I never changed my postal address. I just had my post redirected until I only had to do it once for when we bought our first home together rather than me moving into his flat. And so when we went to our different town halls, different boroughs to register intent, we were given such a hard time. Why are you not living together? How can you possibly be getting married if you're not living together? Are you sure this is not a marriage of convenience? Are you sure this is not, you know, some kind of your loophole that you need to be married for? And I had to go down the line of, look, I'm clergy and it would be really inappropriate for me to be living in sin with, you know, with my partner. partner before we were married, my community would be very disapproving, which was not true at all. It was just I was trying to extricate myself from this apparently unusual situation that we weren't officially living together yet. So
I do know a rabbi that won't perform chuppahs for couples who haven't lived together yet because he feels it's too risky. They don't know each other well enough yet. Yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't even cross my mind. I wouldn't even ask or even notice different addresses if that was the case. How funny!
I love that. Like, you know, back in the day, it would have been so frowned upon to have been living together before, and now it's like, well, you're not. Why? How could you possibly be? And I do often wonder how far those kind of trends go. And
I did have a couple many years ago who had a civil wedding 3 months before their chuppah was planned because parents really didn't want them to live together until they were married. And so they had a civil marriage, moved in together, and then I did the chuppah 3 months later when she was 3 months pregnant and I was 6 months pregnant. Do you know the Jewish joke about how you can tell what kind of denominational wedding
really?
It is?
Really? We're telling this joke as three reformed rabbis? Unbelievable. Go on, now you have to
But the joke is because I was under... So the joke is, how do you know if it's an Orthodox wedding? The mother of the bride is pregnant. How do you know it's a conservative wedding? The rabbi's pregnant. And how do you know it's a reform wedding? The bride's pregnant. So... I got married. Awful. I'm married. It is an awful joke, but I married this couple when I was pregnant and the bride was pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
Actually, the I do have a horrible memory of a wedding I did when I was 8 months pregnant in a greenhouse in Kew Gardens. And it was about 48 degrees. I was so hot and so pregnant. And I think all the couple will remember is me schwitzing through this. I was dabbing my forehead and I was so hot.
Yeah, they can be really hot weddings. I have to say, this is kind of not wedding related, but I'm going to segue it back to weddings, see if I can do this. I went out for dinner with Anthony a couple of weeks ago and I went to the toilet as always popping up to the toilet. And on the next table, Ant was just sat there obviously and ended up overhearing and they were talking about the Jewish friends out for dinner about how awful it was that there were female rabbis, such a thing as female rabbis, and they're only Jewish because they've like driven by a synagogue once. So for the rest of the meal, all I did was go, well, Rabbi Miriam said, by dropping it. It's very funny. But that's the beauty of what we do is, and in weddings and like mixed faith blessings and equal marriage, is that we're showing the best of what it is to be a progressive Jew, which is to deeply understand our Judaism, actually, to understand where it's come from, where the rituals are, be empowered enough to say, how are you going to make this personal? How is this meaningful for you? Like, what a powerful question. Like, that's going to stay with people for the rest of their lives and their kids and their grandkids if they have, you know, that's a powerful
question. And
to
start with the couple, right?
Right, exactly.
To say, I'm not starting with, this is the wedding ceremony. Yeah. How can we tweak it for you? But rather, let's start with the couple and let's build the ceremony. You might build exactly the same ceremony with five different couples, but actually... starting with them, make sure that you build the ceremony that's right for them. And I think that's so important rather than, well, this is the only way there is to mark this life cycle moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still waiting. I haven't done a wedding yet so we've like been speaking about how to like reclaim these rituals and always to make it about the couple, always to ask how is it meaningful and interpret it. I have yet to do a wedding, which is following Rachel Adler, who's a scholar, wrote the book Engendering Judaism. And she, in essence, argues, not kind of the opposite of what we're saying, but another route is that actually that ceremony, there's an alternative to it, which is Brit Ahava. Specifically, she wrote it for her daughter, didn't she? Who's getting married to her then wife. But as a kind of contract of a covenant of love, Brit Ahava means a different ceremony that is infused with Jewish, deep Jewish ancient wisdom and rituals, where it's actually saying this is more of a ritual that is fit for today that reflects what that covenant is rather than the contractual thing. And I think like a few years ago, I was very much like Brit Ahava all the way. Let's throw it out. And I think I'm coming now to a point of being, we've got it all. It's like a banquet in front of us. Rabbi Lionel Blue Zichrona Livracha used to say that Judaism is like a banquet, right? That there are so many beautiful options that you work out what is it that's meaningful for me. And we've got these covenants of love. We've got the Kiddush Shin, the traditional ceremony that we can adapt and adopt. We've got mixed faith blessings that I don't think most people know about. I still get phone calls saying, oh, I've just heard that you do blessings for couples that are, and my mum always says, as my dad's not Jewish, I don't know why I'm saying that so much today. My dad's not Jewish. She was, you know, she really thinks if that was around today, it would have just been everything for her to have you know, and how Jewish her family is, that she's got a rabbi. Like, you know, she just wasn't able to have that. She had to go to a town hall registrar, and that was only thing option, and it was a separation from her Judaism.
And every time I do a mixed faith blessing, somebody will come up to me afterwards and say, if only that had existed when like, if only somebody had done that for me when I was getting married, this would be, you know, our Jewish lives might look so different now. So I realize how important it is for future generations. I have to say, Rabbi Sandra Kvyat and her husband, yes, Adam Driscoll, did absolutely that Rachel Adler. Like, they really, never have I officiated at a wedding for a couple who have studied and worked so hard to create the wedding that was kind of right for them, and really used Adler's kind of blueprint as their roadmap.
Yeah, I was at that wedding. Amazing.
First Brit Hav I went to was actually Rabbi Deborah Cohen Harris.
I was just
now
thinking of her.
And her husband, yeah, Keith. And she actually has written an article which is on the Reform Judaism website, www.reformjudaism.org.uk, in our resource bank.
Oh yeah.
Reform Judaism in 1,000 words. The article on weddings is Deborah explaining that process and what it was to plan a Brit Hava and why. And you know, I've done kind of a couple of those, as well as lots of the more traditional format. And I think you've expressed it so beautifully, Robin, that sense of look at this beautiful table, a wedding banquet where you can choose what you're going to eat and enjoy and remember for years to come.
I always find doing weddings, though, mixed faith blessings, the most nerve-wracking of everything that I do. Like, not a sense of like absolute terror where I can't move, but like, there is so much, there are years sometimes of planning that have gone into it. And even more so with the COVID stuff. Like, I've got a wedding that's suspended for 2 years. It's going to be a fantastic wedding. Shout out to Dan and Neil. It's going to be wonderful. But they're still waiting for the venue to confirm. And like, the anticipation, the build up, the planning, they've got friends who are going to be singing, who have like written songs. Like, it's going to be immense. That kind of, whew, this is a day that has been thought about, that people care about. It's a real privilege and it's terrifying.
It can also be so stressful for the couple. And I always feel so bad watching what couples go through sometimes. You know, we did it as well. We had, my brother had to mediate between me and my dad over the invitation list. And, you know, could his colleagues from work come when I couldn't have everybody I wanted? And these things become really sort of blown out of proportion in a way. But they're really important, and it does, when things are important, it's meaningful and it becomes worth the fight. So yeah, I think often we end up trying to hold people through this thing of beauty that's become a thing of stress, and trying to help, you know, remember what the beauty is. So I send, about a couple of weeks before a wedding, I actually send couples a questionnaire that they each have to fill in individually without showing the other, which are basically questions about each other. And I do it partly to help me write my address and be like sort of very personal with them, but also because it reminds them why they're doing it. You know, why did you fall in love with this person? Why do you want to spend the rest of your life with them? And so many people have said it really helps ground them, ready for the ceremony, to remember after all the, you know, menu planning and seating plans and everything else, they can actually focus on why are we doing this.
Yeah. I don't think my friends will mind me telling this story, but it's why I get so nervous doing weddings. But when I was a rabbinic student, I was a guest at a close friend's wedding. In fact, Johnny was the best man. And we, during the, they having an Orthodox Jewish ceremony, and throughout the ceremony, Alex and Sarah became Simon and Sarah. And the first time the rabbi said it, there was like a little kind of, oh, did he just, you know, and then the second time there was a little titter of embarrassment. And then, you know, a little, you know, and all through it just became a little bit more, you know, the community found it a bit funnier and a bit kind of, you know, they just found it, they were laughing. And then throughout the speeches at the party, everybody then continued it and like started like, ah, Simon and Sarah, mazel tov. And I think I was the only guest that didn't think it was funny at all. I was just sitting there going, may I never ever feel so detached from the bride and groom that I A, get their names wrong, because it wasn't like a slip of the tongue. He did it multiple times. So may I never feel so detached that I could do that. But also that it could be about me, right? It could be about me and my mistake. Because actually, as the rabbi, you're just facilitating something that is about them. And it needs to involve kind of as little as you as possible. You're just facilitating their ability to be doing something else. And I just have held onto this moment and my kind of very physical reaction to never let me be doing a wedding like that. Luckily, they are still very happily married with gorgeous children, and they are wonderful, wonderful friends. But their wedding sits on my shoulder as my reminder to make sure I write the name of the couple on every single time I'm ever going to mention it. Every page in my thing, it's written so big and bold everywhere, just in case.
I remember judging a rabbi in, it wasn't even the rabbi, probably it was the organizer. We went to a wedding in Israel of an old school friend of Gary's, and it was on the banks of the Kinneret as the sun was setting. It was absolutely beautiful. Can't have been sunset actually, because that wouldn't be legal, because Jewish time has to be either right before or after, so you know which day it is. But anyway, it was on the banks, it was stunning. And because the Kinneret was quite low, Lake Kinneret had had a drought for many, many years, and we'd had to walk about, you know, almost a kilometer, I think, to get to the banks. And they got there and realized they'd forgotten the wine. So they went back to the hotel to get a bottle of wine while we're all standing around, which in Israel is totally normal. No one cares. And it's all very informal. And they came back with a bottle of red. And I would never use red wine at a wedding, because if you spill that on a bride's dress, you're in so much trouble. So I was very judgy about their red wine choice. I was like, practical rabbinics 101.
There are so many things to remember, though, aren't they? Like you said, like, you know, the time of a Jewish wedding. So there are certain days also that you can't get married up, certainly like not Shabbat, but some Chag, some festival days as well. And all the choreography of the wedding itself, of like the circling and the practicing. I always say to people, the couples, if they're doing, because often in the weddings I'm doing, it's not the woman circling the man, it's a mutual, so 3-3-1 usually, and then the breaking of the glass. I always say practice it, because actually it's like a slightly logistically complicated, but there are so many elements, aren't there, of like other people holding the wine and giving it to people. There's lots of moments of, you know, potential disaster.
I'm very, very grateful to our marriage secretary at Shul, who takes so much of that stuff off of my shoulders and does all the legality pieces and makes sure that all the paperwork's in place and that we've got, you know, the glass, the kiddush cup, all of those kind of things. It definitely, definitely makes life easier having a wonderful marriage secretary.
I'm a marriage secretary as well, and as lots of rabbis tend to be, just in case. And we had a wedding in Sussex that I went down for, and it was over a 2-hour journey. So I said to the wedding secretary, "Don't worry, I'm invited to stay for dinner, and it's silly for us to go separately, and I'll do the marriage secretary bit as well. I will avoid that at all costs if possible." Again, it's such an extra level of stress of things you have to remember, and getting the wedding certificate signing right, as well as the ketubah signing right, and remembering the right pens, and as you said, the glass and the cup, and grabbing everything yourself. No one's passing it to you. It was a lot.
Although after a wedding on a boat where it was a little touch and go whether rabbi and marriage secretary were both going to be on the boat before it was ready to depart, we have a thing now where I always email her my running order and exactly what I'm saying, and she always emails me the form that needs to be filled in, so that actually if either one of us didn't make it, we both could do the other one's job as well. Because imagine, like, you know, everyone's there, everything's in place, except, you know, I've got flat tire and haven't turned up, or she's got a flat tire and I officiate and then it's not legal. So I'm also the marriage secretary, but try not to need to be. And she's the marriage secretary, and we haven't yet had to use her as the rabbi, but she'd do a great job.
She'd be great. Yeah. We've gone on like a whole journey now, and we've got into all the details, because this is what weddings do, isn't it? You end up just thinking, what if, and should this needs to happen at this time?
What is the right flower to have in your bouquet?
Who knows? Exactly. Yeah. I'm lucky because Anton is an event manager, so he planned the whole wedding. I just had to choose the colour of the tablecloth, which was very stressful, actually, but it was a nice blue colour in the end. but a happy marriage, which is a good thing. So I think we've come to the end of our time talking about weddings and mixed faith blessings. So I think we could go on forever because it really is such a mitzvah and they're just beautiful things to be involved with, really. So be in touch if you'd like with us, as always, media@rjuk.org. And we're going to be back in a couple of weeks' time, believe it or not, because we're going to be talking about Hanukkah for our next Rabbiting On episode. So bringing even more light and joy into the world, from weddings to Hanukkah. So have a nice week and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Nice to see you. Rabbiting On.